see it.
Time for the Hamilton Corner with today's guest host, Brian Fisher.
Darkness is not an affirmative force. It simply reoccupies the space vacated by the light.
This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
And Urban Family Talk.
It should be uncomfortable for a believer to live as a hypocrite.
Delivering people out of the bondage of mainstream media.
And the philosophies of this world.
God has called you and me to be his ambassadors. Even in this dark moment. Let's not miss our moment.
And now, the Hamilton Corner.
Howdy and welcome to the Friday edition, closing the week up here. Hamilton Corner, Brian Fisher is my name, filling in for Abe, a poor man's Abraham Hamilton III. Glad to have you in the conversation. Abe often making a difference. Baton Rouge, Louisiana, speaking at a Truth for a New Generation conference with Alex McFarland. So we're happy to step in and give him an opportunity to be involved in that ministry. Now, it's the Hamilton Corner. Abe is normally here. I'm Brian Fisher. You can catch my program at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, Central Time, right here on American Family Radio. Well, let's just kind of jump right into what we want to do tonight. I want to begin by talking a little bit from the Scriptures as we begin the program. My reading has taken me right now to the second half of the book of Jeremiah. And in chapter 26, the Lord tells Jeremiah, look, what I want you to do is stand in the court of the Lord's house. That would be the temple. There would be an outer court. There would be an inner court where the Holy of Holies was, and only the priests could go in there. But the outer court, everybody could go there. And I want you to stand in the court of the Lord's house, the Lord says to Jeremiah. And I want you to speak to the cities of Judah that come to worship in the house of the Lord all the words that I command you to speak to them. Do not hold back a word. Now, it may be, God says, that they will listen, everyone turn from his evil way, and I may relent of the disaster that I intend to do them because of their evil deeds. You shall say to them, thus says the Lord, if you will not listen to me to walk in my law that I have set before you and to listen to the words of my servants, the prophets, whom I sent to you urgently, though you have not listened, then I will make this house like Shiloh, and I will make this city a curse for all the nations of the earth. So the people didn't like what they heard from Jeremiah, so they laid hold of him, saying, you shall die. They were so ticked off at the word of truth that Jeremiah was bringing him that they actually threatened to kill him. And the priests were involved in this. The prophets were involved in this. They were all saying, this man deserves the sentence of death because he has prophesied against the city as you have heard with your own ears. Well, he hadn't prophesied against the city. He just told the truth. He just relayed to them the very word and the words of God. And so Jeremiah says, look, I'm just doing what God told me to do. I am just telling you what he told me to do. He told me not to hold back a single word. So if you don't like it, you don't like the word I'm bringing to you, then your issue is not with me. Your issue is with God, because my job is not to hold back a single word. And Jeremiah says, look, I'm in your hands. Do to me whatever you want. He was outnumbered, really didn't have much of a choice here. They were going to put him to death. But he says this in verse 15, know this for certain, that if you put me to death, you will bring innocent blood, that's my blood, you will bring innocent blood upon yourselves and upon this city and its inhabitants. And so Jeremiah wound up, as a result of everything, living another day. They let him go, and he was able to live another day. But the people of the city did not listen to the word of God. Now, a couple of lessons here, I think, for us. Number one, just as individuals following God, I think one of the things we need to do is read the entire Word of God. You know, we like our favorite sections. We love to be in the Psalms. We like to be in the Gospel of John. We like the Book of Romans. We like to be in those parts that are our favorite parts. And if you're a pastor, I mean, I know this from my experience. If you're a pastor and maybe your habit is to teach topically, there are certain passages you just soon stay away from. You come up to them, and rather than teaching the whole counsel of God, which is what Paul says he did in the Ephesian church, our tendency is to hold back a word. We do the opposite of what God told Jeremiah to do. Do not hold back a single word. Well, those topics can be kind of uncomfortable. They're controversial. They touch on contemporary issues. They touch on highly sensitive contemporary issues. And so we decide we just as soon stay away from them. You know, and it's interesting. Paul said in Acts chapter 20, when he's talking to the Ephesian elders, he said, I did not shrink back from telling you the whole counsel of God. Now, what does it mean? I did not shrink back. That means Paul thought about it. That means Paul's impulse was to shrink back. He knew what he was about to tell them was going to be very, very unpopular. He'd been in dicey situations before, could put his life at risk. But he said, I made up my mind before God that I was going to tell you everything that God had entrusted me to impart to you. I was going to give you the whole counsel of God. I remember one time there was a couple in my church who actually moved to Iowa, and I was unapologetic as a pro-life preacher of the Word of God, had no compunction about that, no hesitation, often involved in helping pro-life legislation get through our state legislature, involved in pro-life walks and marches and all that kind of thing. And this couple who had been in my church, and they had now moved, I think, to Iowa, so they'd been around long enough to know that I was pro-life. And the situation that they ran into is that she had gotten pregnant and pregnant with twins. They'd gone to the OB-GYN for checkups and all that, and he did the ultrasounds and the other kind of testing that they can do. And he found out that one of the two twins that she was carrying had a fatal disease. In other words, it was a disease that the child could not survive. When it was born, it would live only for a few hours, maybe a couple of days, and then it was destined to die. And the doctor was putting some pressure on her to selectively abort that twin in order, in his words, to give the second baby the maximum chance to survive. Well, this is heartrending for them, and they called me, the husband and wife together called me, and wanted to know what they should do. And I got to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, she was in tears. This was devastating to them. She's carrying a baby in her womb that she knows is barely going to survive a birth. And she just wanted to know. They were actually leaning toward taking the doctor's advice. The doctor was trying to ease their pro-life concerns. Look, this child isn't going to live. You can't do any harm to this child because it's simply not going to live after it's born. And by the way, the doctor turned out to be right. The baby didn't live more than but a few hours, maybe into the second day. So anyway, they were just all busted up over this thing, and they wanted to know what to do. And the path of least resistance, the easiest path for them to take, was the path of aborting the baby. That's what the doctor wanted them to do. That's kind of what their impulses were inclining them to do to solve this problem, to get it behind them, and to move forward. And so they asked me what I thought they should do. And man, I tell you, I was torn because I could hear the anguish. I could hear the pain, everything in me. I wanted to relieve them of that burden. And so I was inclined. I mean, I was right on the edge of giving them the justification to go ahead and abort that baby because it can't live after it's born. And I was just about ready to go down that route, and something just grabbed me. I think it was the Spirit of God. I said, Brian, you cannot do that. You can't do that because that's a baby in there. However long it lives, that's a baby. So finally, I talked to him. And I said, look, here's my counsel to you. You know where I stand. You know where the Bible stands on the issue of the sanctity of life. And what I would encourage you to do is to carry this child to term and entrust its life and its future to the mercy and the grace and the power of God. But I think what you want to do as parents, God has entrusted you with this life, and I think you will regret it if you don't give this child, if you don't give this baby a chance to live, if you don't give this baby a chance at life. You will regret that for the rest of your life, and I don't want you to have to deal with this. So I think that you ought to give this baby a chance to live and see what God will do. And they finally decided to do that very thing. It was a painful decision for them. And I tell you, I wanted to shrink back from declaring to them the whole counsel of God, but I declared it to them, and they made a decision to carry that baby to term. They named the baby was born, and they told me this in a subsequent phone call. They called me to let me know how things had turned out. They'd given the baby a name. It was born. It was safely delivered. They had the opportunity, they told me, to cradle that baby. We cradled that baby in our arms. We cuddled with it. We sang to it. We prayed over the baby. And then we had a funeral for the baby. We have a headstone, and that baby's got a headstone with his name on it. And we were able to do that. And they were contrasting the way things would have gone if they decided to abort that baby. They wouldn't have been able to acknowledge the existence of that baby. They would have wanted to try to forget all about it. But they chose the path of life, and they said, you know, we are never going to regret having made that choice. So you might be in a similar situation. I remember being out to dinner with our extended family, and my nephew was sitting across the table from me, and there was a friend that he had, a female friend, who was pregnant. And he wasn't sure what to do, and I just finally said to him, look, somebody needs to be an advocate for that baby, and you've been nominated. You are the one that has to be an advocate for that baby. And I do not know what he decided to do, but again, I just wanted to just keep my mouth shut. I didn't want to wade into a conversation where maybe I wasn't going to be welcome, but I knew that I had to declare the truth. So if you're in a situation like that, and it might be over the abortion issue, it might be about some other issue, which is very difficult, a lot of emotional components to it. Be sure that you do not hold back a word. That was God's word to Jeremiah, God's word to me, and I believe it is God's word to you. Now, I want to turn my attention to one other story before we get, maybe two, before we get to the first break here. This is a story, you know, we've talked frequently. I know Abe has talked about it. I've talked about it on my program, is the censorship that Facebook does. You know, they blocked me for 24 hours. I was in Facebook jail for 24 hours. I was talking to someone today that had a post on Facebook. It just disappeared on them. They just pulled it down. They didn't like it. And I've had other posts that have been censored. And so Facebook is systematically engaging in this, and they're targeting conservatives, conservative organizations, and conservative points of view. Now, here's another example of what I am talking about. This is from Breitbart. Says this, Facebook has censored a pro-life group's ads. You know why? You know why their ads have been censored? Because the ads feature ultrasounds and photos of babies who survived premature births. So they found the ultrasounds to be objectionable. They said this violates our community standards. These are photographs of a highly sensitive nature. We're not going to let you put them on our Facebook page. Now, you know, you think about ultrasounds. There's nothing objectionable about an ultrasound. You know, when parents, I don't know, Jason, you guys had a baby not too long ago, and you get excited about the ultrasound when you went to the doctor's office. Of course, that's the first baby picture that most parents have in their baby book. There's nothing objectionable about it. It's a sign of life. But that shows you how in the tank Facebook is for the pro-death agenda. And they also didn't like it because there were pictures of premature babies who had survived. That ought to be heartwarming. Nothing objectionable about that. We'll be right back. Hamilton Corner, stay with us. Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. As an invading army of up to 14,000 illegal aliens snakes its way across Mexico, it's worth asking what power the law gives to the president to deal with this. It's much more expansive than most people think. Here's how the law reads, and I quote, "Whenever the president finds that the entry of any aliens or any class of aliens into the United States would be detrimental to the interests of the United States, he may, by proclamation, suspend the entry of all aliens or any class of aliens as immigrants. President Trump doesn't need anybody's permission, and he doesn't need the approval of Congress because he already has it in the law. He can bar entry to all 14,000 illegal aliens in the caravan if he wants to, and I think he should."
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
American Family Radio,
Samaritan's Purse,
and your family.
Together, we can bring good news and great joy to needy children.
Simply pack an Operation Christmas Child shoebox with toys, school supplies, and hygiene items. Then, drop off your shoebox gift during National Collection Week.
Visit AFR.net, click the Operation Christmas Child banner, and then get packing.
Len Ingram of Redeem Clean felt God call him to support the American Family Association.
I'm a laundryman. I'm the son of a laundryman, too. I love clean clothes. I love the business. I love everything about it. This project was built exclusively to support AFA and AFR. There's no strings attached. Another thing that I would like to see come out of this is that I would like to see other business people feel a calling to support ministries, wherever and whatever they do to share the gospel of Jesus Christ.
In addition to your regular AFA giving, Redeem Clean Laundry Detergent allows you to increase your support of AFA just by continuing to wash your family's clothes. For clean laundry and support of a cleaner society, it's Redeem Clean. Learn more, find options, and get Redeem Clean products at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
Shining light into the darkness, this is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio
and Urban Family Talk.
Welcome back. Brian Fisher sitting in for the inestimable Abraham Hamilton III. He's off on assignment at a Truth for a New Generation event in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, ministering to millennials. By the way, I don't know if I said this yesterday or not, but there's a cool thing about millennials. I think I know why. The article didn't say why. I don't know if I talked about this yesterday or not, Jason. If I did, let me know that I did. But millennials as a group are single-handedly, if you can say that about a group, they're bringing down the divorce rate. Did I talk about that? You know, and I think I know why. I think they've been victims of divorce when they're growing up, and they didn't like it. I mean, it's painful. And they want something better for themselves. They want something better for their children. They don't want their children to have to go through what they went through. So that is really, really, really good news. A couple of other kind of items on the social issues front that I want to get into your mind here before we move on. We're going to talk about the bombing deal here and Cesar Sayoc in just a second. But this is a story from Sydney, Australia, by Reuters. And here is the headline: Sydney's same-sex penguins become parents. Sydney's same-sex penguins become parents. And you look at that, it kind of slides right by you, and then you stop and think about that for a second and say, wait a minute, that is biologically impossible. Two males can't mate and produce offspring. Two females can't mate and produce offspring. If you're going to have a penguin egg, they're called chicks, by the way. If you're going to have a penguin egg, somewhere behind this story, there has to be a missing mother and a missing father, because it takes a man and a woman. It takes a male penguin and a female penguin to produce an egg. And we don't read anything about the genuine missing parents in this deal. But, of course, Reuters is gaga. These are same-sex parents raising this child, hatching the egg, sitting on it. Isn't that tender? And all that kind of stuff. You remember that children's book, Tango Makes Three? That was actually based on a true story out of some penguins at New York Central Park Zoo who reared a chick. So anyway, the zoo people got this egg and they stuck it where these two penguins lived and they wound up kind of adopting it as their own. Okay, let's talk about this bombing. You know, they've arrested the suspect now in this bombing. He's a Native American Trump supporter by the name of Cesar Sayoc, not sure how he pronounces his name, but he is a junior. And let's talk about what we have learned about Cesar Sayoc through the course of the afternoon. One thing we discovered is that he has a fairly lengthy criminal record. Now, very proud of what he claims is his Native American heritage. In fact, the company that he runs is called Native American Catering and Vending. He's got another company called Proud Native America, One Low Price Dry Cleaning. Mouthful, but it's the name of his company. He's a bodybuilder. He's used steroids, was busted for selling steroids at one point. Has worked in a strip club. In fact, he made his living in the early part of his adult life by dancing at homosexual strip clubs, apparently. Kind of a bodybuilder type and kind of proud of his physique and all of that business. So that's the one who has turned out to be the suspected mail bomber in this whole fracas. Now, as you're aware, none of them were wired to explode. None of them were in danger of exploding. There was no triggers on any of them. So nobody was actually in any kind of danger. And, you know, I don't know if you noticed this. I was struck by the fact that none of these people that evidently were targets of this guy showed any signs of fear. Did you observe that? None of them ever were afraid. None of them ever talked about how afraid they were. They didn't go into hiding. They didn't leave town. They didn't shelter in place. They just came out and were just kind of teed off. So I don't know if maybe the word got out that these bombs are actually, they're not detonatable or whatever. I mean, they had some stuff that could explode, but there was nothing to detonate them. No trigger to them. Anyway, they really weren't frightened, you know, and the FBI is saying the only reason to do this would be to scare people. Well, it didn't work because nobody was even scared. But, of course, the media is going to make a huge deal out of the fact that this guy was a Trump supporter. That's all we are going to hear. They were blaming Trump's rhetoric before this thing even happened. They were blaming his rhetoric. And then when these bombs started showing up in people's mailboxes, they blamed Trump for that. It's his rhetoric. It's incendiary. It's violent. And this is what happened. Now, I want to play clip number R2, Jason. This is Nancy Pelosi back in the day. Not that far back. This goes back, I think, to 2000 and maybe 16, maybe 2015, when, remember that shooting that occurred when the Republicans were practicing for the congressional baseball game? Once a year, the Republicans play the Democrats in a fundraiser at the same stadium that the Nationals use, and they were practicing for that, getting ready for that game. And this guy, who was a hardcore leftist, showed up at the field with a sniper rifle and started picking people off. Shot Steve Scalise, a Republican representative from Louisiana, right through the hip, went clean through his body, damaged internal organs on the way through, barely lived, and then just now is regaining his ability to walk. So, of course, conservatives pointed out, look, this guy's a leftist. This guy has been imbibing all of the vitriolic rhetoric of the left, and so maybe this is a guy that was unbalanced enough to be influenced by that, and they said so. Now, here's what Nancy Pelosi said at that time. Remember, similar situation. You got this very inflammatory rhetoric on the part of one political party, and somebody winds up getting shot or endangered. And now the Democrats are out there every time they can get in front of a camera. This is Trump's rhetoric. He's to blame. His rhetoric is uncivil. This is what happens. We've got to dial it back and all that kind of stuff. But here is what Nancy Pelosi said when it was a Democrat that had done the dirty deed.
And I think that the comments made by my Republican colleagues are outrageous. Beneath the dignity of the job that they hold, beneath the dignity of the respect that we would like Congress to command, how dare they say such a thing? How dare they? So this sick individual does something despicable, and it was horrible what he did, hateful. But for them to all of a sudden be sanctimonious as if they don't never seen such a thing before.
Okay, so Republicans are just being all sanctimonious here. This is despicable what they're saying. It is outrageous for them to make this connection. Apparently it's okay when you're going after a Republican office holder. So anyway, let's see what else we got. He's Cesar Sayoc. By the way, we'll take calls here in the last segment. We'll take them on the bombing, these hoax bombs. These are all hoaxes, by the way. We'll take them on the bomb deal, and we'll take them on the caravan, because we'll talk about that in just a minute. Anyway, he's got a rap sheet. They tracked him down through a fingerprint on the package that he had addressed to Maxine Waters, matched it with DNA from two other packages, which were linked to an sample taken from him at a prior arrest. And this guy's had a lot of prior arrests. He's been convicted on felony charges, including grand theft, drug possession with intent to distribute, never served prison time, but he's been arrested and fingerprinted and DNA'd any number of times, looking at a 58-year stretch. Now, his rap sheet goes all the way back to 1991. Had a felony arrest in 1991, grand theft in the third degree. 1994, his own grandmother accused him of domestic violence. 2004, arrested twice within 5 weeks for possession with intent. 2013, a second grand theft arrest, this time with battery piled on top of it. By the way, he says he belongs to the Seminole Tribe of Florida. Press checked with the Seminole Tribe. They never heard of this guy. Looks like he may have some Filipino heritage, so maybe he's trying to pass for Seminole. Now, he says on his social media profiles that he's a promoter for a male striptease troupe, the Chippendales. Maybe you've heard about them. They're male strippers that go around and do their thing. And he was listed on his social media profiles as a promoter for them. And he did some of that kind of dancing when he was younger, not hireable now at his age, 56 years old. He'd been living in his van because his parents had kicked him out of their house. So he's been living out of his van, lost his own home in 2009 when it got foreclosed on. So that is the guy that's responsible. So obviously not a stable guy, been in trouble with the law repeatedly, repeated felony arrests. Guy's not a good actor. Had some steroid issues in the past. Those things actually can mess with your head if you take too much of them. But he sent 14 of these bombs. His this guy named Tony Valentine, who is an Ohio event promoter, I think maybe promoting the Chippendale-type acts and that kind of stuff, said that he was, quote, a big muscle head, end quote, who wanted to be a professional wrestler. His dream was to become a professional wrestler. This Valentine guy said he really couldn't find his niche in life, and I guess he found it now. So he was an exotic dancer, bouncer at a lot of strip clubs. A cousin described him as a loose cannon and a lost soul, didn't speak to his family, had a problem with steroids, been in strip clubs since he was 22. That was his life, taking steroids, getting all buffed up, filed for bankruptcy in 2012. So a long string of problems in his past. So that's just information. We'll probably find out more. He's been registered as a Republican, by the way, since 2012. So this guy is a Republican. He is a big-time Trump supporter and sent these fake pipe bombs in the mail to celebrities, including, by the way, Jim Carrey and Ron Howard. Why would you go after Ron Howard? That guy was Opie back in the day, Andy Griffith Show. That's Opie. Why would you go after Opie, even with a fake bomb? Anyway, he did that. And there isn't any way to kind of airbrush this thing. He was a Republican who sent these fake pipe bombs in the mail. But obviously not a stable guy. Obviously had a number of issues in his life. He'd made a bomb threat against Florida Power and Light back in 2002, ticked off about the size of his light bill, threatened to blow an employee's head off in that fracas and all of that business. So like somebody said, you know, there are bad people on both sides, and apparently one of them got loose in Florida. Now, a couple of quick things. We'll take your calls. The number is 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. This thing has completely taken the caravan issue, this illegal invading army, taken them completely out of the news. Nobody's talking about them anymore, but they're still making their way. The steam seems to have kind of gone out of the deal. They're down to 3,000 or 4,000 now. They're up at the high water mark at about 14,000. So anyway, we'll see what is going to happen with that. Donald Trump out there urging people to get out and vote, Republicans to get out and vote. A reporter embedded herself, Sarah Carter, great reporter, great journalist, embedded herself in the caravan and discovered that, yes, there were people from other nations in this caravan, just as Donald Trump had suggested. There were people from India. There were people from Bangladesh who were Muslims. Bangladesh is an absolute hotbed of Muslim jihadist activity. So there were members of the caravan that were from Bangladesh. They get into the country, they would represent a legitimate threat to the safety and security of the United States. And don't forget, like Mike Pence said the other day, you know, our authorities stop 10 people that are on the terrorist watch list every day coming across the border. So it'd be astronomically unlikely that there wouldn't be some with terrorist links in this caravan. Now, let's play clip number 4. This is Mika Brzezinski, and I think Mika here, I don't think I've ever played a clip of hers where I agreed at least with a part of it, but there's a first time for everything, and this is it.
And if any doubt has been raised in your mind over the past 24 hours about the danger that the press is in, that former Democratic officials, former presidents are in, everybody who apparently is in Trump's scope, his focus, are in now danger, critical danger, their lives threatened, wouldn't this be the election of a lifetime? Wouldn't you say at this point, if you want to check this president, now's your chance. If this president might need checks, now's your chance. If you want to see some balance in Washington so you're not scared anymore, now's your chance. Isn't that the message?
And I think she's right about that. And I think the Democrats at some level sense this, that Donald Trump is about to turn into a runaway train, and this may be their absolute last chance to do anything about that. And I think people that think that way are right. I've got a number of stories here in the stack about how Republicans are surging. Ron DeSantis now down in Florida running against that socialist Andrew Gillum. He's now creeping ahead. Debbie Stabenow, this liberal Democrat senator in Michigan, she's lost 17 points off of her lead over John James, who's a real quality conservative. Her lead is down to 7 as they hit the stretch. But here is the point. You know, we've talked before, and I've talked about this frequently on my program, that America is a divided country. Saw a poll today, 80% of the American people think that we are divided over values. And we are. We've been divided into two camps. There's no common ground any longer between these two camps. And that's what's important about this election. If the conservatives can win this election, hold on to the House, hold on to the Senate, they will take momentum into 22 and may be able to take over everything with decisive majorities. Be right.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing. He had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Welcome to Fast Facts with Reasons for Hope. I'm Carl Kirby, and we're talking about bees. To be or not to be? That is a question. When it comes to math, bees have us beat. They even make Newton and Einstein look like rookies. Fact is, God built them with a supercomputing navigation system, something evolution cannot explain. Imagine you have to visit 9 stores in 9 different locations. How do you figure out the best route with the shortest distance between them? Garmin? Siri? MapQuest? Well, bees don't have smartphones and don't need them. Bees always figure out the best route with the shortest distance between flowers and with no problem. And they use the sun as a compass, just like the Vikings did. That's great, you say. But what do they do when it's cloudy? Check this out. In order for bees to navigate when the sun's not visible, they have very special photoreceptors that'll find the sun's place in the sky even when it's overcast. Talk about super cool. For more information about Reasons for Hope, check us out at rforh.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. The request really seemed like a no-brainer. Camping World installed a giant American flag in front of its store in Statesville, North Carolina. The red, white, and blue measures 40 feet by 80 feet, visible for quite a ways off Interstate 77. But the city of Statesville has an ordinance that limits the size of flags to 25 by 40 feet. And the other day, the city council refused to grant Camping World an exemption. City leaders say they had concerns that if they allow massive American flags, it could open the door for massive flags that some might consider to be offensive. Marcus Lemonis is the chief executive officer of Camping World, and he says he really does not care what the city council decides. Mr. Lemonis says all he's asking is to be left alone so he can run his business and pay his taxes. Both patriotic endeavors worth flying a giant flag for. I'm Todd Starnes.
Shining light into the darkness. This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio
and Urban Family Talk.
Howdy and welcome back on this Friday evening. I tell you one thing. We got Hannah and Jason and I here doing this program live. And I'm telling you, this place is a mausoleum. I mean, everybody except the three of us has already started their weekend. But no, we're here in the salt mines, slaving away just for you, just kind of teasing. All right, let's go to the phones, talk about the caravan, we'll talk about the bomb, we'll talk about the election coming up. Any of those things that you would like to talk about, let's do it. Let us begin with Mary in Kansas. The number, by the way, again, for those of you who'd like to become a part of the conversation here, number to call to join us is 888-589-8840. Give us a call at 888-589-8840. All right, Mary, what's on your mind? Talk to me.
Oh, I was just going to say the gentleman that was arrested as a suspect for making the bombs, you know, his criminal record started back in the early 90s, so he went through 2 Democrat presidents then, and he was supposed to have been a Democrat then. Are they going to be... say they maybe caused some of his problems, like they're trying to say President Trump has stirred him up, which I think there's bad and good on both sides, and they should just quit trying to throw slang at each other and just say, ask each other, who, the one without sin, cast the first stone. So President Trump, hang in there. The good Democrats and the good Republicans Let's pull together and get this nation back on track. And I do hope the president will shut the border down until we find out the real people that really want to come here and make a good life and not cause trouble.
Okay,
so God
Mary.
Bless you. It's all mine.
Okay, very good. I appreciate your thoughts very, very much. And, you know, I do believe President Trump, you know, I'm in favor of him shutting down the border. He has the authority to do it. Remember that the law says that he can suspend immigration. That's the word in the law. And this is not an executive order. This is a law passed by Congress. He can suspend immigration to any aliens or group of aliens that he believes are detrimental to the interests of the United States. That's a verbatim quote, detrimental to the interest of the United States. Now, I would say anybody looking at this caravan, that's why the Democrats aren't talking about this thing. This is bad optics for them. They don't want anybody looking at that caravan and connecting it with the Democrats. So they're not down with this thing because the optics are so bad. It's not good for their electoral chances. But anyway, you know, there's nobody looks at that on either side of the aisle and says, hey, this is good. Let's let 14,000 people just come, you know, bull rushing into our country. And so this is this whole group. This is a caravan that you could suspend entry to the United States. And Trump, all he has to do is do it by proclamation. He doesn't have to get agreement from anybody. He doesn't have to take it to Congress. He doesn't have to take it to court. Doesn't have to take it to his cabinet. By proclamation, if he deems them detrimental, he can suspend them simply by proclamation. That authority is invested wholly in him. All right, let's grab a call from Tony in Arkansas. Tony, welcome. What's on your mind? Talk to me.
Well, I was just, my little take on this bomber, I'm feeling like he could have been highly influenced by someone within the Democratic Party. I just don't know how he come up with all them addresses and places to send these bombs. And the bombs are not even, you know, able to detonate them. So if you notice, they sure have quit talking a lot about the rhetoric that the Democrats are doing. And they've kind of calmed down and they're not doing anything here of late. And I think they've realized that they've raised so much cane and caused so much trouble that they're going to lose this election. So they've tried to turn it around and turn it back on the Republicans with all this bombing stuff.
Yeah. Well, you know, and see, that's what I thought. I was one of the ones that I immediately suspected this as somebody from the left wing being behind all this to try to discredit Donald Trump and the Republicans, make them look bad, make them look like murderers, rabid pipe bombers, and all that kind of stuff. So I was frankly surprised when it turned out to be a Republican. You know, I said at the time, look, we don't know. We don't have enough information to know. I wouldn't be surprised if it's somebody from the left. In fact, that would be my prediction, but we just don't know. We'll have to wait to find out. Turns out, you know, but, you know, Mary's point was, look, this guy wasn't a Republican until 2012. So he'd been listening to somebody else since 1991. You know, maybe those are the ones that were planting these seeds in his brain. Anyway, I don't think we want to try too hard to try to shift the blame away from this guy. I mean, the blame belongs to him. Whatever people said to him, you know, he's an adult. He knows it's not right to blow people up. It's not even right to threaten to blow people up. So he knows that. So the blame for this has got to be laid squarely at his doorstep. And what he thought he was going to accomplish by this hoax, by this fake thing, it's just hard to grapple. You know, even Donald Trump was out there today complaining about this thing, about this bomb thing. It's taken some of the wind out of the sails of the Republicans as they come up to this election on November 6th. All right, Tony, listen, I appreciate the call. And I'm, you know, who knows? Those that think there's some leftist fingerprints behind this, those folks might turn out to be right too. We'll just have to wait and see. I know that they're going to get to the bottom of it. You know why they're going to get to the bottom of it? Because the intended victims are Democrats. So they're going to get to the bottom of this. The FBI, they're going to throw everything they've got Everything in the toolkit is going to go in to finding out who's behind this, because Democrats have been threatened. And that's the one thing that the establishment, that the deep state, will not abide. All right, Austin, welcome. Austin in Texas,
thank you,
what's on your mind? Talk to me.
Yes, sir. I find it, to me, fascinating that the day after we show up with Republican double-digit leads in key battleground states, magic bomb threats come out of nowhere. And then the weirdest part is, and this is just for any listener out there, try and mail anything to the U.S. Postal Service of substantial weight. Mail anything without being on camera. The fact they didn't see this guy within hours and have his face everywhere is just, to me, amazing.
Okay, so you're indicating maybe law enforcement kind of dragging their feet in the early stages here, because they do photograph every package. They got pretty sophisticated photographic technology. They photograph every passage, every package. They've got cameras at every postal store. So this guy would have been caught, would have been filmed going in or out of one of those postal stores. So, you got a really good point there, Austin, and I think we are, just going to have to wait and see. They tracked him using the fingerprint. And they talked about the fact they've got this sophisticated photographic technology. We're going to find him. We'll find him using that, if nothing else. And apparently that did not work. So, and I suspected, Austin, like you did, the timing is what was curious to me. Same with this caravan. Caravans turned out to be an absolutely terrible idea, blowing up right in the Democrats' faces. They're not talking about it. No, the Democrats haven't said one single solitary word about this thing and about how we have to show compassion. We got to let them all in. We got to take them in. This is not who we are as a country. None of them are talking like that because, it's just bad. It's bad optics, and it would be bad policy to let them in, so it's not helping them at all. All right, Austin, that's a good call. Let's go to Leslie in Texas. Leslie, welcome. What's on your mind? Talk to me.
Hey, good afternoon, Brian. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Hey, the thing I'm thinking about the caravan, one of the reasons the Democrats aren't talking about it, not only the bombs, but also because, as you expressed earlier, they're actually finding out that what President Trump said was in that caravan is in there, and they don't want that to come out. And so that's one of the reasons why they've stopped talking. And the timing of that caravan was suspicious. And Capital Research Center has an article out which traces back to where they think some of those organizers of that caravan might be.
Yeah, and I remember reading that story, Leslie, and, I think that was the work that was done there was good work. And they finger some groups that have been Hispanic activists and immigration and open borders activists for some time. And so there's some organization, there's some money behind it. You got some of those parents, they're pushing their kids in $1,000 strollers, $400 to $1,000 strollers in that caravan. Where do they get the money for something like that? Who's feeding them? Who is giving them a place to sleep? Where's the food and the water coming from? By the way, you just reminded me of something, Leslie, that I have got to remember. What were we talking about? Doggone it. Something that I should have said it when I thought of it because I knew it'd be gone. Anyway, it'll come to me. It's some factoid in this deal. Maybe, Leslie, it's what you were talking about the organizations in the U.S. that may well be behind this organizing. But somebody's got to be behind it. There's got to be somebody pushing this thing along. I mean, 7,000 people don't just magically just decide to show up at the same time without some organization and a lot of help. All right, Leslie, appreciate that. If I think of what it was I wanted to say, I'm going to give you credit for putting it in my brain. Let's go to Alan in North Carolina. Alan, welcome. What's on your mind?
Well, it's the same thing with the caravan, and I'm a native of Texas. The Army took me here to Fort Bragg, and I retired. But what I would do is, in research I did for one of the books on immigration, and found out that President Eisenhower in the early 1950s had a solution, because he knew that there were a lot of illegals already living here in the United States, and he wanted to make sure that there would be some jobs for the veterans who were returning from Korea right after the Korean War. So he took one of his general buddies and put him in head of the immigration. They had just started sweeping north, and they rounded up a lot of the illegal aliens. And what they wound up doing was putting them on a ship and taking them down to the Yucatan Peninsula and putting them ashore, you know, with rations. My solution would be, any who do make it to the border, is to round them up, take them, put them on a ship, and take them down to Honduras and put them ashore with some MREs. And then President Trump really needs to get his smart people to work and really run it to ground about exactly how this happened. And, you know, for those countries, I agree he should cut off aid. Secondly, he should go ahead and put some of the smart guys to work to find out who in the United States is complicit and then charge them with sedition. And third, he really needs to build a physical wall. Mm-hmm. That needs to happen.
Yeah. Well, you know, and, you know, you're right about what Eisenhower did. And the idea was to get these people as far away from the border as you can. You know, take them there and then drop them off as far from the border as possible. So they got to make their way all the way from the Yucatan Peninsula to the border again. Try to discourage that and just, you know, just round them up and take them back. You know, and that would be my hope, that Trump will just use the military, use whatever he has to do, so they never get to set foot on American soil. Don't even let them set foot so they have some kind of plausible claim for an asylum hearing, because these immigration attorneys get hold of them, just tell them the magic words to use. You know, the Washington Post, New York Times, been interviewing the people in these caravans. They're not coming here seeking asylum or refuge. They're coming here to make money. Their motivations are economic, and there's no basis for asylum if that's what they are doing. All right, Alan, great call. Thank you. Let's grab a call from John in Michigan. John, welcome. What's on your mind? Talk to me.
Well, you know, I got a couple things here. And just thinking about all these people that are coming here, they want to make money. You know, you listen to some of these people, and they would think that this country is the worst country in the world, and we're awful, yet everyone wants to come here. And what is it going to take to see the country as a whole to come together? You know, after 9/11, I felt like the country had a lot of pride, and now it seems like you have to pick a side, and it's almost like they have us in a civil war where we can't come to a compromise or work out on anything. You know, we have to protect our borders, but, yeah, I understand showing compassion, but, you know, these people want to come to our country. Everyone bashes our country. And another thing that shocks me is the disrespect for law enforcement. I just feel like here in the United States, it's a real sad time. It's hard to work with the other side when they're not even open to compromise. You know, what is it going to take for this country to come together, do you think? You know, yeah. Is it going to be a big event, or how do we work together to solve problems as opposed to just pointing fingers?
Yeah. Well, and I don't know there is a solution, John. I think we're frankly past the point where we can have some kind of kumbaya thing happen and bring us all together and create a sense of unity. And I read a very persuasive column this past summer, basically making the observation or the case that we are now a nation divided into two camps. No middle ground, there's nothing in between. One side or the other, one camp or the other, has got to win, and they've got to win big. They've got to win so decisively that they control the political landscape for two or three generations. I agree with that thesis. That's why elections are so important. That's why I believe if conservatives can win on November 6th, they can build momentum, and then maybe in 2020 can take a decisive control of all of the levers of government. Well, that's it for this week. Have a great weekend. Worship God. Love your family. Don't forget to bow low before God. Stand.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.